Good afternoon, everybody. It's 2 o'clock. It is Thursday, April 4th, 2019. We're gathered for a general discussion in the Board of County Commissioner Conference Room. We have all three commissioners present at this time. First up on our agenda is the 2020 U.S. Census Bureau. We have Nicholas Brown here, and welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to pass it on to you, and we'll get going.
All right, so first I have these lovely folders for you.
Nice folders they are, too.
A lot of information in there. So I'm an Oregon resident. I do work for the Census Bureau, but I live over in Redmond. I was born in Klamath Falls, and so the census is personally important to me as a resident of Oregon first before being a member of the Census Bureau, and that's kind of why I started doing this job. So the decennial census happens once every 10 years. It's in the Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 2. It's in there really early, and it's been happening since 1790. We do the census in order to make sure that everyone is counted. Everyone who lives in the United States, regardless of citizenship, is to be counted. That's the idea of how
do they have to declare citizenship when they count? I mean, for instance,
so that is in the hands of the Supreme Court right now. There is a question regarding citizenship, and we're prepared whether it happens or whether it doesn't. So we've kind of already prepared because we're going to deploy that online and through the mail, and also over the phone, and so it's already set up whether it is through there or whether it's not. Okay. That's yet to be decided. It was passed through Congress in the manner in which it's supposed to, and so now we're waiting to see what the Supreme Court has to say.
I think that would be a pretty, you know, especially with the atmosphere we have today, that would be a pretty darn good
decision to have.
Necessary.
Well, it's in the hands of the Supreme Court right
okay.
now.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. So the census decides a lot of different things. First and foremost is the apportionment of our congressional seats. There's 435 congressional seats, and depending on how many people you have in your state is how many Congress people you're going to get. If a lot of people don't respond to the census, it means that an area may potentially lose a seat, and it may go somewhere else, which is a big part of why it's so important that everyone gets counted and that we ensure that everyone gets counted. Also, funding. Federal funding, and if you look in your packets there's a George Washington study. It's probably the third or fourth back on the right-hand side.
Okay.
Talks about in 2016, it's the next one. There you go. It talks about $13 billion in federal funding that Oregon received in 2016. In 2015, it was about $10 billion. Every citizen who was counted in the state of Oregon in 2015 was worth about $2,500. In 2016, they were worth about $3,100. Go ahead.
Is this done? This is $13 billion over 10 years?
No, that is 1 year.
Per year. But it goes back, this one here says data derived at the 2010 census.
Well, that's the study they conducted in 2016, information gathered in 2016,
okay,
or released to us. So initially we were working off 2015. They just switched it on us, and they're working off something from 2016. The point of the matter is the whatever the individual number is for a year is less important than to think there's $675 billion at least in federal funding that they're going to dole out, and it's a pie, right? And depending on how many people you have in your state is how much of the pie you're going to get. And so that trickles down to a county city level as well. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that everybody in Josephine County is counted so that you get the correct amount of money that you're supposed to get for your county.
Okay.
Because it doesn't just matter from a federal funding standpoint either. We give this information to the states. So, you know, if you want to have your proper representation as far as state Congress, state Senate, that's all done from population counts as well. And the information that is collected by the Census Bureau. Now, how that's decided and divvied up is done at a state level, not a federal level. And the Census Bureau isn't deciding on where the money goes. The Census Bureau is just giving the statistics.
Just counting it.
Right. Go ahead.
So I've given him a time frame.
Question till the end.
Just want you to know that he's got under 20 minutes to present, and then we got about 10 minutes for questions.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
So it's also, this information is also used to decide where different community-based organizations may go, or where a business may decide to put McDonald's based on demographics and things like that are collected. There's a information pamphlet or a thing that's like first that talks about the census in general, and then second there's some of the things that the census does, I think, other than the decennial census. There's the American Community Survey where they collect data. There's an economic census that's done every 5 years. The census is constantly working and collecting data, but this, the decennial census, is what is going to decide, like I said, the apportionment, the distribution of federal funds, and it's not yearly. It's every year for 10 years until the next one comes around. You don't get a second chance to be recounted over that 10 years. So it's really important that you get it right the first time. So there are going to be three different ways that we're trying to do the census this time. It's going to be a little bit different. People are going to be able to respond online, over the phone, and also through the mail. 95% of houses in the United States will be sent something in the mail. There are P.O. boxes. We don't send stuff to P.O. boxes because P.O. boxes stay in the same place. People move. Now, just because someone has lives in an area with a P.O. box doesn't mean we don't want to count them. So in areas where there are P.O. boxes but they won't be sent something, we want to do things to encourage them to respond on their own, whether it be over the phone or
Illinois
over the
Valley is one of those areas, and Merlin are both areas that have heavy P.O. box usage.
Right, and so if they had, so if they have a post office or something like that where they go to their P.O. boxes, or maybe there's some kind of, you know, FedEx stores or other places that have, you know, those kind of...
the private system.
Right. We want to be able to get, you know, up a flyer that says, hey, respond to the census, you can do it here, which is something that I have that I would be able to provide to different people, or that I will have in some cases. So there are 12 different languages that will be supported online, over the phone, and through the mail, I think. Well, online and over the phone. There's also kind of translations cards we have. I think it's something like 59 different languages that can help people get through that stuff.
Sorry, that's ridiculous. But anyway.
It's important that everybody responds, though, so we try to make it as accessible to as many people as possible.
Whatever. Carry on.
All right. So
I've lived in cities where whole sections speak the language where they were refugees,
right.
and that's what they still speak, but they work here, they pay their taxes here. They
whatever policy
here.
We had was blown. Back when we started letting them put up signs for different languages. So, just my opinion. Anyway.
I don't have political opinions from 8 o'clock to 4:30 in the afternoon or whatever my work schedule is for the day, so I can't.
As well, you shouldn't.
I can't wade into those waters.
And I wish I spoke 12 languages, so I...
So there are going to be 10 or 11 questions. There is a why do you ask or why do we ask form in there, which talks about every question individually, and it gives a little bit of information on why we ask the questions we do, why we're looking to collect the data we do. Your address, phone number, the count of each person at the address, name, sex. It's not gender. It's not a question of gender. It's a question of sex. I know that that is something...
So it's a yes, no?
It's okay. It's male or female. It is self-identification, though, so however someone chooses to do in that. As far as questions regarding gender, that's something that have to be passed up through Congress and approved, and, you know, someone needs to ask.
Oregon law hasn't even changed that, and they're addressing it this session, but it's still, right now, there's two answers.
So, right. So that's where we are on that, and there's just not, those are the questions that there are. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't give enough information to anybody who wants to read about it, on census.gov, there is a more in-depth explanation on why we ask all the questions that we ask.
But the citizenship question is in.
It is.
Looks like it is in
it
right
is,
now.
It is in, and if it, and it'll stay in if that's what the Supreme Court's decide, or it'll go away.
Oh, so it's still pending a bit. Because they
it
may
is
decide
pending
in
a bit.
June.
Yeah, it did go, it went in front of Congress because... In 2018, somebody much higher than me in the swing of things got all the questions together and sent them to Congress. And so, you know, that has happened. And so it was going to be on the census, and then it was brought before the Supreme Court to decide whether they can do it or not.
Gotcha.
Is there a system for redundancy? So I get a memo at home.
Mm-hmm.
I send my postcard back in. Or is everything directed to online? You do it online. And you can determine if a household has responded twice.
There are people whose job that is to make sure, you know, okay, these people already responded. We have different programs and times in which they happen. So starting in the summer, we're going to start doing address canvassing. And so basically, we're going to check 30% of the addresses that we have. And there's a gigantic master file that the Census Bureau has on all the addresses where people live in the United States. And so they're going to send out enumerators. We're going to hire them locally. We're looking for, for early operations, 120 applications here in Josephine County specifically. That's not how many people we're going to hire. I don't know. They don't give us specific numbers on how many people are exactly going to be hired. But, so for the entire census, it'll be significantly more. It'll be hundreds of applications we're looking for. Because we do in May, or starting in April after the census, non-response follow-up. For the people that we know didn't respond based on their addresses, we send people out. And the people we send out, we want to be local. Because it's going to be a lot better received if, Bill from Grants Pass goes to somebody else's house rather than Nick from the government goes out. And so that's why, and me as a partnership specialist, even though I'm not from here, they hired me as a resident of Oregon so that I could come as a resident of Oregon to the residents of Oregon, not some guy from Washington, D.C.
Or like your card says, Los Angeles Regional Census Center.
Right. Well, yeah, my temporary card. So we're part of the LA region. And the LA region is California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii. And then there's the Denver region, which is, a big chunk of everything just east of us. And so that's just the way it's broken down.
I see.
I sometimes think about deleting the Los Angeles stuff off of there. Because everybody sees that and it's like, oh, you're from LA? No, I'm not. I'm from close to here.
The middle of Oregon.
Yeah. So another big thing is, with all this data we're collecting, what do we do?
Why should that bother you?
What? It doesn't bother me.
No, but
it seems to bother people that I meet.
I haven't thought of you as being from LA or whatever. You're just doing your job. I don't care where you're from.
So I can tell you that when we first as a county got the email, I see some guy from LA reaching out. Now I happen to respond. And you came back, and it was like, okay, how can the county help? What can we do? And we set up the meeting. But that was the first thing I saw when I got your email about, hey, are you where the census is coming from? I'm like, why is Los Angeles reaching out to Grants Pass? Is this a fluke of some,
Okay.
So I was one of those bad ones.
I experience those kind of things all the time. I was in Harney County last week. And,
tough county.
I thought to myself, what happened in Harney County in 2016? And it didn't occur to me for whatever reason until I drove out there that morning. And so the whole way, I was thinking about, the wildlife refuge and the FBI, being in Burns and all that stuff. I thought, man, there's a chance I'm going to be received really poorly here today. And because the more rural it gets, sometimes the harder it is for me. Yeah. I happen to be from a really tiny place, though, where, I happen to grow up.
Did you meet Commissioner Mark Owens?
I met...
Great big guy.
I believe so.
Nice guy.
I happen to like all three of them. I thought they were all nice.
Patty and Pete. They were all Pete's judge.
Yeah, okay, so yes, I did meet all three of them. Sorry, I'm in a lot of these meetings, so I don't.
It's all good. They're actually a really good commissioner set.
They were fantastic, and I actually got to sit in there for an hour and see what they did, and the amount that I've learned about the responsibilities of county commissioners has blown my mind. I understand there's a lot on your plate and a lot that you have to do.
Nick, I think you'll appreciate that all of us understand the need for the census and all that kind of stuff. I really want to know how the county is a partner. How do we help? What do we do? Because Oregon's looking at a sixth Congress position. I mean, that potentially that will put us over that mark. You're right as far as the state lines and all that kind of stuff. So where does the county come into play?
Okay, so you are basically the highest elected officials in your area for your county. And if you believe that this is important and that people should be counted and that we educate people on how they're counted, that means that something should get done. We like to try and form what are called complete count committees. And those committees will reach out to our hard-to-count populations. Those hard-to-count populations can vary based on a lot of different factors. Sometimes it can be living in a gated community, speaking English as a second language, not speaking English as a language at all at home, or different areas that are more rural, PO boxes, things like that. How do we get the word out to everyone to make sure that they know that they need to respond? By forming these committees and getting... Sorry. By forming these committees, we're able to kind of create a network of people who know the area who can help us get the information in the right people's hands.
When does the census start?
Census day is April 1st, 2020.
2020. So we've got a couple of years to kind of just...
No. We have less than a year.
Less than a year, excuse me.
Right.
This is 19, isn't it? Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, and the committees start sooner, correct?
Well, the state created a complete count committee, and they just had a big kickoff for it this week. And so I've been out. I've spoke with Harney County, Klamath County, Lake County, Deschutes County, which is where I live, and they're a little bit behind. And I'm going to Malheur. Am I saying that right? I butcher that word. I'm going out there. I'm going to Baker County, Jefferson, Crook. I've got 20 counties right now that are my responsibility.
So I guess probably what we need to do is just go through this and make sure we have the right information. And we just had every opportunity that we can get that, you know, kind of forewarning. The census is coming up, and this and give just a short deal of how important that is to the citizens.
Well, who's on the committees? Is there a representative for our area?
That is determined by the local governments. We don't. So what my ask is that a committee be formed,
okay,
and that someone from the county work as a liaison with me. I can't be on the committee, but I can support the committee in any way possible. I just, like I said, I have 20 counties that I'm working with, so I can't be on every committee for every county.
No, I agree with the sense.
But, you know...
But not the way you describe it, maybe your name shouldn't be on it, on the list.
But I can act as a liaison, and I can provide any information, flyers, training, necessary to make sure that we get the word out, like I said, to the right people in the right places. We have a program called Statistics in Schools, which has lessons plans that, you know, could go to a school district that maybe a teacher would want to put in something that they could put in a classroom that would help educate the kids to get that stuff back home. You know, there's a lot of different things that we can do to help get the information out to everyone. And so if we, like I said, if we have a committee that's a network of people in every county in Oregon, and for that matter across the United States, so that people understand the importance of the census and what it does for them, then we can make sure that we get what is rightfully ours.
Okay, so what's the process of having an official committee formed? I see your template here.
So first is appointing someone to be in charge of the committee. In Klamath County, it's one of the commissioners there.
I think that sounds like that needs to be something for the chairman.
If I had a nickel.
He's chairing this year and he's chairing next year. I think the chairman ought to do it.
Well...
That is perfect.
What do you
think,
Trish?
That's perfect.
In Klamath County, it's one of the commissioners. In other counties, it's commissioners. In other counties, we haven't gotten there with the counties yet. Could be a city manager. It could be a person from a volunteer group.
Rotary.
Right. You know, but the first step is appointing someone to chair the committee, giving them my information. That's the first step.
Okay.
Right, and then they're in charge of recruiting some census workers?
Well, we have recruiting assistants. The recruiting assistant for Josephine County, her name's Sandra Wiltrout. Yeah. And so she should be out in the community getting flyers up, talking to people, and making sure that kind of thing is happening.
Is she from here?
She lives in Medford.
Okay.
I don't remember. I just fill the census thing out and send it in.
Right.
Back in 2010, I don't have any animosity one way or the other, but I guess you probably do get some people that have pushback on such things.
Yeah, I've sat across the table from commissioners who wanted to, you know, argue with me about the right that I had to ask the questions. And the fact of the matter is I don't ask the questions. I don't make that decision. And so, you know, but the information...
Just point to the Constitution and remind them they took an oath to uphold the Constitution.
That works in some places. Sometimes that's all you need to say. But the thing is everybody has different things that motivate them.
Yeah.
And my job is to figure out what it is. And so you all seem pretty motivated. So I haven't had to go
nice
as hard
try.
As I do sometimes.
Yeah.
But,
I love it.
Okay, so what's the time frame that we need to come up with this committee?
As soon as it can start happening, it's good.
And you're the contact?
I am the contact. Okay, so we just hired a new partnership specialist. So I'm in vent. We just hired a new partnership specialist who lives in Eugene. Her name is Michelle, and she may start working with Josephine County.
The I-5 corridor, okay.
Yeah. And so, because basically everything east of the Cascades right now is mine, and Josephine and Jackson County. And so I think she's going to take Jackson and Josephine County from me, and I will make sure that you have that information as soon as that happens. So, but currently it is me, and as soon as that changeover happens, I'll make sure that she has, or you have her information so that she can do it. And she worked she did my job in 2010, and she's come back again to do it in 2020. So you might be getting a better deal with her, honestly. But
what are your thoughts, Darren, on who it should be?
I don't know. I think we need to talk about it. I don't know if I could decide right now.
Okay. Because there's some carryover into next year.
Right.
Probably makes sense that whoever starts it finishes it. So I'm thinking a vice chair would be a good.
It's like a three-way racquetball match.
I could be lobbied, Derek.
Yeah, all right, but we should. How? I mean, is a week enough time for us to get back to you, or is that
absolutely
okay?
Yeah.
So we can put it on a discussion on Tuesday and have time to look through the.
I think I'm here to ask you to do something. I think you do this on your schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any authority in this.
I think the 2020 census is going to be far more contentious than the 2010 census.
There was a lot more money for the 2010 census, too.
Oh, really?
More contentious than, and where did the money come from? Because that's going to be one of the contentious part of it. As this thing goes up every 10 years, it's going to get harder and harder and harder to sell it to those folks out there.
Yeah.
Even though it does mean a lot to them and what share of the pie that they paid into it, because none of this money was made by, it was printed by the United States government, it wasn't made by the United States.
Well, right, it's our money
exactly.
coming back, so we want to make sure that we get it.
That may be one of the
right.
things we explain.
Right.
That, you know what, they've already taken your money, try to get it back.
Well, in that little handout I gave you, there's a big breakdown of a lot of the programs and stuff that the money is used for. But
right.
Even if you don't get SNAP or WIC or anything like that, your account will help the people who need it. And there are a lot of jobs that people work full-time, and they still receive assistance.
Sure.
And that's something that I think a lot of people don't consider. Oh, well, everybody's got a job. You know, there's the lowest unemployment rate. Well, yeah, but
well,
a lot of people are making $10 an hour.
You're doing just fine, so you need to stop right there and don't get me started on assistance, and you'll be just fine.
Well,
I'll take it a step further. 1850 census in Portland, Oregon, I found my grandfather. Not my grandfather, but my grandfather's grandfather.
1850. Wow.
So, to me, it's part of being an American, it's part of living in this country. I have no problem supporting being there. I'm not saying that we'll have everyone responding, but we at least want to make sure that every person that lives in Josephine County has an opportunity to say, this is where I'm living. And
I think it's our obligation to get the right information out there rather than all the scuttlebutt. Try to get the correct information out.
Well, so let me ask about the process. Like,
okay.
Let's say one of us takes the lead,
mm-hmm.
and then we... start forming a committee. Do we actually appoint people to this committee?
Yeah.
Is it an official, we appoint you? And then once we've got a committee that we think represents our community, then do you have any like meeting templates or processes to go through that we have to, or we just get together and talk about census stuff?
60 pages of information in here on complete count committees, on a training manual, a guide on what to do with them, and so this has been thought through pretty heavily.
Sure. Good.
And And I am also a resource, or like I said, Michelle, there's going to be, I think, 8 or 9 of us in the state of Oregon. And quite frankly, any one of us is available to help anytime we can with whoever we can, with all the local governments that we
need. So when do you want to do a jet boat trip that you have to come back and not that we're paying for it?
That would
but
be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You want to got to down. Drive along, yeah. around or along the road a lot of the way here, and it was beautiful today. So even though it's a 4-hour drive, it was really nice.
Don't come back in the summer. You won't be able to see the river because of the smoke.
You need to be here the end of June when it's starting to get warm.
Yep. Plan your trip.
Okay,
now.
So we will follow up with an agenda soon. How much, I mean...
I don't have any questions. I just think that we need to just absorb this a little bit. I think we all understand the importance of the census. And I think, you know, whatever we brainstorm out of it as far as the committee goes and the makeup of that committee, and I'm assuming it has in there how many people you think should be on a committee.
Yeah, I just found a meeting, a template.
Some committees, you know, might be 3 people. Some could be 100.
Right.
You know, it really depends.
Would a county create multiple? Like, we'd have an Illinois Valley committee. We'd have a Williams committee.
Yeah, it absolutely could be done that way. And the fact
demographics in the Valley.
You all probably have a lot more experience forming committees than I do.
Right.
And so that's kind of why we come back to, you know, local governments, because they know who their people are, they know who they need to get out to, and they have a lot of experience doing this kind of things. I'm here to present it to you and then offer any help that I can.
Okay.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely get in touch soon.
Okay.
We'll get some time for them to process.
Absolutely.
We'll determine who is the sucker you get to work with. I mean, who is the lucky person you get to work with? Just kidding.
The
I don't
census
mean it that way.
Specialist.
You know, already coming to mind that there's a group in Sunny Valley that I think would be a great one that would maybe be willing to help with this, and they're locals, which will be more trusted. You know, there's different ways we can reach out to different
Approach
groups in our community
yeah.
to make sure that the demographics of our whole county have a voice. So that's great. So we'll make sure to follow up and get in touch.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you, Nick.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank you.
I'm going to see if our BLM friends are
Can
here.
You suggest anywhere close by to eat?
What's up?
Dan's going to say Powderhorn.
Right.
So, how's he going to say?
Well, wants to know a good place to eat nearby.
It depends on what
say?
Kind of food you like.
I like all kinds
powder
of
powder. Okay, so do you like pie?
Who doesn't like pie?
Well, I'm going to point out...
across the street.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's... not this street, but the next street is D Street, and then just a little further on the left, Powderhorn Diner. They're having a hot turkey open-faced sandwich special today with mashed potatoes.
Sounds fantastic.
Or
and on the right is...
today when she was, or they do a half sandwich with super salad and a piece of pie for like $10.
Wonderful. Thank
and
you so much.
Well, you're in recess. I'm going to use the can because I get a chance on the way back from lunch.
Thank you very much.
Take
I'm
care.
I'm going to look for the BLM folks, and I will... be right back.
So I'll stay here and hold down the recorder.
We'll find water.
I really am going to be left alone.
Ready for y'all.
Right. The public. How's it going?
Fantastic. Pretty good.
What brings you to the meeting?
The census.
Ah, so you want to volunteer for the committee? Let me get your name.
You know me. I'm the cataracts in transition.
Oh, yeah. Don't hurt your eyes.
Come on in.
You're who?
Jean Mao.
Oh, okay.
These 4 chairs are open, y'all.
That's you behind those foster grants.
Yeah.
4. Wow.
Hello.
Hi. We'll get introduced. I've seen you. We'll wait for Dan to get back in just so we don't do introductions twice in here
tonight. I'm going to scoot at about 3. Just FYI.
Okay.
I've got something I cannot miss.
Okay. I think that
me too.
We'll have a chance to get through this mostly.
I think so.
I love airplane mode. But I don't have to worry about accidentally getting a call. Right.
What do you think about Tuesday?
Well, I was only there for the morning.
Okay.
But I enjoy the group part.
I thought our table was a pretty lucky table.
Thought so too.
Yeah. It was like, gosh, I don't know what anybody else's table is doing, but I like my group, so. Mm-hmm. But. Very cool.
What about the afternoon?
Afternoon was almost a repeat of the morning. It just a little more detailed with some of the presentations up on the panel. But it was it's talking heads versus dialogue, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily what... But I had no indication of who was there or what was... You know, it was kind of like... It was... To me, it wasn't as clear in the afternoon who was there and why.
And it was a much larger group, right?
It was. And it's so who were they trying to reach? What were they trying to do? And is it just information sharing or are they going to come back and... you know, what was the goal?
Yeah. Well, we had, twice as many people there in the afternoon as in the morning. And, you know, part of it was to give them a sense of, here's what we want you to do, you know, in terms of putting together a plan to, or strategy to address this issue.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that our... Like, I think the morning was the most beneficial in the dialogue, but anyway.
I agree with that, so. Yeah. All right, well, we're going to continue then. So we now have our BLM cohort here, and just for you guys' sake, this is Commissioner Darren Fowler.
Hello.
And Commissioner Dan DeYoung.
Yes, hi.
And you all know me, but I'm Lily Morgan. So and then for the sake of our... Well, everybody, I guess I just say, go ahead and introduce you.
Okay. My name's Jen Smith, and I'm the Associate District Manager at the Medford BLM.
And my name's Elizabeth Burkhard, and I'm the District Manager.
I'm Don Robinson. I'm the BLM Law Enforcement Ranger for Medford District.
I'm Jason Stanton from the Sheriff's Office, and I'm the BLM Contract Deputy.
Okay.
So I know this first started on our agenda as a timber sales update, and so I want to make sure we get the opportunity to do that, but mm-hmm. it seemed like this week some other topics had come up, and I just wanted to have, I changed it on our agenda to just say agency update, because I wanted to have an opportunity that if we talked about anything BLM related, mm-hmm. that we didn't get in trouble that it was outside of the agenda, but, so just that opportunity, because it's been a while since we were all here.
Yeah.
And, so just an opportunity to touch base and, kind of go from there. So we can start with the timber update and then if you wanted to.
Because
you guys reached out to us first, right?
Sure, yes.
So I don't want to hijack your meeting entirely.
Well, I wanted to do just kind of a general, I mean, I like to come check in with you guys periodically, so that was kind of how it started. But obviously the biggest thing we always have going on is really our timber program. So I wanted to... bring in some statistics from the last year and then talk about what we're doing this year. So last year, across our district, we offered 23 million board feet of timber for sale. And then what was harvested was 16 million board feet of timber. So something that... So for this year, we are... planning to offer 42 million board feet of timber. So that's almost double what we have done in the last 2 years. So that is going, those projects are, they're going pretty well.
Is that in response to management?
In response to management?
Yeah, we're talking about increased management for reduction of fuels and so on and so forth. Is that in response to that, or is that just part of the normal cycle?
But it's actually our new resource management plan for Western Oregon identifies 278 million board feet across all of Western Oregon for our annual target.
Just on BLM.
And this is just, yes. And so this is a ramp up to meet that target. And so Medford's portion of that for this year is 42 million board feet.
Okay, you offered 23 last year and only got, did you only get bids on 15 million, or is there still roughly 8 million out there that was sold under the 23 million that has yet to be harvested?
Under the 23 million, yeah, there's a 3-year window for every timber sale for their implementation. So those can be, those vary.
So when you offer 23 million, do you get bids on all 23 million board feet? No. Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Did you not get bids on 8
million? We did not get bids on, I'm not sure. The 16 million harvested is from prior year sales.
Okay.
So those
that could be in the 3-year window. Right. Okay. Right. Got it. Okay.
We're in the same boat with our county forest lands. Yeah. I am curious of your potential sales or what was offered last year, how much was impacted by the fire? Fires, rather.
For sales actually offered last year, we had very little volume that was actually impacted.
Oh, that's lucky.
Yeah, it was very lucky. We had a couple of units on a project called Shady Elk, which is in Jackson County, that was impacted by the Miles fire. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the burning on BLM was lower intensity, so we didn't have a ton of loss in terms of pending sales pending harvest.
Marketable timber.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It burned through, but it didn't mm-hmm. burn up.
Right. We are doing where we have salvage projects planned this year on areas that burned on about 5% of the BLM lands that burned. So
why isn't it higher for you know?
Because of the intensity of the burning. Okay. That's really what was hard. That's what's harvestable. That's what's commercially viable. Was also what we could. Assess and access.
But that's another that gets time. Thrown out there that says, you know, why didn't they harvest at all? Some of it's burned up beyond usable?
Really, no. It's more that it's going to those areas are going to recover.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We had about 5 million board feet, I think, that we mm-hmm. weren't able to sell. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to replant those areas and just deal with mm-hmm. the dead snags and stuff like that in that area, but as or the trees rotting out. But mm-hmm. we were able to sell a portion of our that burned out. But mm-hmm. considering our spring sale that had record numbers mm-hmm. To the fall with the fires, it was mm-hmm. a substantial loss. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as us trying to use those funding for our juvenile program to keep our forestry program going,
right.
We also were supporting our veterans expansion with some of it. So. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, not to interrupt, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's fine. So we anticipate we will offer about, I want to say 11 million board feet of our sale program this year will be salvage harvest. Or
So in the 42?
In the 42.
Okay.
Yeah, about 11.
Now, doesn't that salvage have a shelf life of about a year?
Yes.
And then it's done?
Yep. Yep, so we actually offered, we started offering stacked and decked logs in November of 2018. We put our first 5 million board feet up for sale at the end of February, and then we'll be finished with our salvage offers in June. So we have one more sale happening in April and then another one in June.
Okay.
But I would just put a plug in. I'm really proud of our team because they put those sales up. They worked very hard to put those sales up very quickly. So
definitely,
I think that's what the citizens prefer. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see it just go into emissions. You know,
right.
They'd like to see it.
Yeah.
You know, helping. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's exciting. And then another thing you were asking about the difference between like where we get offers and. There's a lag time typically between offering a sale and awarding that sale because I'm sure you're all familiar with the number of protests and appeals that we receive on our sales in this area. Mm-hmm. And so another thing I'm really happy to report on is that all of our sold and unawarded sales are in the process of award in one way or another. Unless they are under some kind of a stay from court litigation. So we've played a lot of catch-up in the last year. In addition to increasing our volume offered, we're also closing that gap between getting sales offered and awarded. So that translates to revenue and jobs and all of those other things that we all value. Let's see.
How about treatments? I know you guys are doing portions of treatments. How's that going?
Uh-huh. We have treated, last year we did prescribed burning on 2,700 acres. You know, as the theme of the workshop we had a couple this week, funding is kind of always an issue. So we're still looking for funding in those opportunities. But the planning that we're, actually one of the major planning efforts that we're undertaking right now is a district-wide environmental assessment to allow us to do treatments up to, I want to say, 2,500 acres for an individual treatment and a total of 8,000 acres in a year. So that'll support prescribed burns, that'll support thinning, all kinds of hazardous fuels reduction that we want to do. And then we'll be doing consultation with the Fish and Wildlife Service programmatically to facilitate all of that. So that's just going to enable us to move forward. That's our timber program for the year, but other updates for the Grants Pass office is, so Alan Bolschweiler has taken a different job, and Jen has been acting for 10 months?
Plays, like musicals.
She's been acting field manager for...
Since October.
Since October. But we will have a new field manager coming the day after Memorial Day. His name is Bill Dean, and he is currently the he's Jen's counterpart in the Prineville District Office. He's worked in Western Oregon. He's worked across Oregon for many, many years, so we're excited to have him join us.
Cool.
Yeah.
So Tuesday I had, we've gotten some, I'll switch gears on you unless you guys have questions on the timber sales.
No, I'm getting ready to chime in, though.
Awesome. So Senator Wyden's staff approached me on Tuesday and asking about Spencer Creek. And their office is getting contacted about Spencer Creek and stuff like that. And I remembered that just in the last week before, I remember Dan heading out of the office and saying, I'm off to Spencer Creek. And I was like, oh, wait, what's going on there?
I've got my Spencer's Creek sticky note right there.
And Jason and I have had some conversations, you know, when I first did my forestry tour with our county forest lands and just talking about the frustration the county lands are having and with BLM enforcement on the county or public lands on the amount of dumping that's going on. I was told that we used to have Title III dollars that went towards cleanup that BLM, was BLM the one that provided that or...
Title III goes straight to the straight to counties.
So it was our SRS Title III dollars.
Yeah. Actually, we had that funded under Title II funding.
Okay.
And it was for a full-time deputy position, so Stanton was here, and then we had Deputy Montrose who did it. That funding eventually went away because the RAC committees at the time decided it's when you had pretty much no patrols in the counties, and they didn't want to supplement county patrols. By doing,
you thought it would go to county patrols.
They
and
figured
not to
it would
where
go to
it was
that.
The intended
so
purpose,
so we still put in the submissions, but the RAC committees would not fund it. So.
And now we don't currently have any RAC committee in play. So is there a way to pursue some title? Because I'm just worried. I mean, our our entire public lands are turning into trash heaps. And I know there's frustration about what do we do? Do we just clean it up? Do we go after those who dumped it? Do we? How do we prove it? Jackson County has a policy. We have a different policy. Any suggestions?
Well,
We've got some extra copies here. This is actually the what Jackson County has currently.
Okay. I was worried that was all one thing.
Just take a look.
Way
at
too
that.
Thick.
Nobody's leaving at three.
And basically, this whole chapter here for solid waste is what Jackson County does, but really sections 08 and 09 are what they enforce.
Okay.
And what this is a solid waste statute, and it allows the deputies...
I've seen this before.
Yeah, when somebody dumps trash, it allows them to have an avenue to actually seek action against them. Because right now, if you say, it's not my trash or I didn't do it, that's it. You can't cite them. You have to have a knowing factor. This actually says that the trash is yours until it's at a landfill and deposited properly. So then it does give deputies, state police, anybody, even it would affect, I don't know if it affects cities, but state police, county, it affects them if they dump trash out there on the public, and it gives the deputies an avenue to seek that and get it cleaned up, get restitution for the cost, and cite them.
But how do you do that? I think that's, I'm going to chime in here because I did go to Spencer Creek, and I met with, I'm going to guess there was a dozen people met me down at the road where Spencer Creek takes off of Murphy Creek. Mm-hmm. We had a long conversation, and they had some real serious issues that have been going on forever and ever and ever. They told me that once upon a time there was a gate past the residences up on Spencer Creek Road, and it was a BLM gate, and it got taken out and never to return, and we will not put a gate up there. We're not interested in putting a gate up there, even a seasonal gate.
But yet I get over onto a property out off of Waters Creek, and there was a BLM gate right there. And the lady said, I want to put a gate up here because I don't want people dumping on my stuff. And they told her she couldn't. I said, I went out there, I said, what's that gate for? And they said, well, that's so we don't have anybody dumping out there. And I said, you don't mind them. You're going to keep them from dumping on your land, but you won't keep them dumping on the right-of-way that this easement that the lady gave you to go through to the next deal. And, I mean, it was U.S. Forest Service. It wasn't BLM. And it was just boggled my mind. I thought, you know what? This isn't making any sense at all. And then it all comes back to the county. And we get, you know, every time they went to any agency, it was all this. Nope. And you talk about the trash. If I went up there and picked something out of that trash and said, here's a pizza box, they go, well, it's not in our jurisdiction. That belongs to this guy. And this guy goes, oh, well, no, that pizza box, no, that's a grass pass. I can't do it either. It's always passing the buck. And to be honest with you, I went up there. That is an absolute mess up there. There are so many shotgun shells in one intersection. There is no dirt.
I'm sorry, I meant to clean that up when I was out there.
You did. You couldn't shoot that many shotguns, Commissioner.
It wasn't.
But the people up there have a number of different things, and it's not just one of them is their fire danger, you know, because they're up there shooting year-round, all through fire season. They're running chainsaws. There's one area up there that they've just tipped over trees for the hell of it. Marketable stuff. This big around. They just tipped it over and fell across the road. Dave Streeter said, yeah, I got to go up there once in a while and log that out because they've just tipped it over. Nobody wants to go up there. I don't blame you.
Well, he does go up there.
I was just there the other day.
Yeah, he goes up there all the time. It's a matter of we don't have any rules in the county about shooting in the county. The law is that if you're shooting in a safe manner, you can shoot anywhere in the
Bingo,
county.
Bingo, you just hit it. Right. You're shooting in a safe manner.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're shooting over the houses. They're shooting at houses. They're shooting all, and I know, you've heard it all from that group of people, and they're pretty intense.
It's not just that group of people, but yes.
Okay, but that group of people is pretty darn intense, and they have a reason to be. If somebody were shooting over and above and recklessly endangering me and mine, and I didn't get any response from anybody, I'd be a little bit upset. And they are.
So I'll bring up this picture, for instance. This is Spencer Creek. There's a burnout mattress with a tire on top of it, and I don't think we're going to find ownership on a burning mattress.
That's a Goodyear tire.
That's true. Let's get the Goodyear family and build them for that. Goodyear this is just one of many. So in this case, it's a matter of this is on the roadway. This could be impeding traffic. Mm-hmm. This, you know, it's obviously someone set a fire, which, oh, that's brilliant in this community to do that and toxic fumes with the tire and all that. So this isn't necessarily about enforcement of who do we go charge or do it, unless we can catch them in the act and we knew they did it. Because in this circumstance, you're not going to find a piece of mail necessarily tucked inside a mattress after it's burned and say, oh, this address. And when you get there, they say, gosh, I paid John Smith to go dump that, and why didn't he take it to the dump? Because I paid him to do that. I don't know. Do we go then and find John Smith and say, you're charged with it because you didn't do it, or do you just stick with him? We have to take out the political ramifications of making that decision, and we probably do need to see about following up with this ordinance and seeing if we can have something come there. Our county is cautious on ordinances related to code enforcement. After 6 years ago, they came back on an initiative that they were overturned by vote. But it doesn't mean that we don't still pursue doing something. In the meantime, who pays to have those areas cleaned up for the sake of the environment, for the sake of the community? And do we just keep cleaning it up over and over that every weekend someone else can go out and dump some more stuff and don't worry about it because there's just going to be the county that goes picking up? And I think this is where we have to stop and say, oh, what is the right answer? I don't know if there's more Title II funds available. And can you only access them with a RAC?
Yes.
And if you can't have a RAC functioning, how do we actually access those titles? So is there somebody at the federal level that we need to lean into to say, can you please get the RACs going so we can get local participation going again?
Just as bad.
We have a solid waste agency in town, but I don't think they deal with...
No, it's
not. They're supposed to deal with some county stuff. Do you guys know about the solid waste agency and if they do any public cleanups? Because I know they have money set aside.
Our solid waste agency, I'm delving into that because we're talking our franchise agreements and so on and so forth.
Cool.
With SOS. But our solid waste agency only goes so far. It can only go so far, and it spends all its money cleaning up because we have compounds. We have household compounds. But going back onto this BLM and this particular site, you know,
I think we've got a little bit of county timber up there. Dave was going to get me a map of what our holdings are up in there, but BLM's got holdings, there's a lot of private up in there also. You know, so mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of jurisdictions mm-hmm. up in there, and I get that. Well, mm-hmm. nope, that's your yard, not my yard. But I, you know, there's car bodies down, there's that one there. That's mm-hmm. that's a Volvo, by the way, that, or a BMW that was listed stolen, and nobody ever went up to get it. It was called in, this is a stolen car, yep, and what are you going to do about it? Nothing. The next weekend, they went up there, shot all the windows out, pushed it over the bank, and thought that was funny. There's a pickup down over the bank in a watershed in that creek. You know where it's at.
That was a roller crash.
Yeah, that one, and then there's one clear up at the end of the road. Another one down, and they've been blowing all the pieces, and they put Tannerite in the doors and see how much they can blow up. I'm not saying that that's good behavior, and I'm a shooter myself, and I've been up shooting, mm-hmm. but we always cleaned our mess up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's my generation, and maybe there's a generation along now that doesn't really
well,
care.
Well, I'm a generation that I clean up my mess,
and you
too.
Clean up your mess,
but
and Darren,
it was because I was taught to do
I don't
the
make
place
a mess.
Better than
and Darren doesn't make a mess, so we're all set to go mm-hmm. in this room. Well, but we're not mm-hmm. the problem here. The solid waste can only get tapped so often because solid waste is for other things too, not just cleaning up the forest. But here mm-hmm. again, I'm going to go back to that gate and the flat out and out by BLM, absolutely not. We're not putting mm-hmm. a seasonal gate up there because they get vandalized. Your gate gets vandalized, but what is that if that isn't yeah. vandalism in its purest form? And your gate, sure enough, it's going to need to get fixed once in a while. I get it. I've seen the damaged gates.
There's another fun one.
Mm-hmm. And so we get the gate up there, and we do it on a seasonal. Fire season is the most important to the folks that I talk to. Yeah, the debris and the mess and the shooting, those were all, I think, first up there was fire danger during fire season because there's people using chainsaws up there. Lo and behold, everywhere else, nobody else can use a chainsaw past 11 o'clock, but they're up there running saws and riding dirt bikes and everything else. All summer long during the highest propensity of fire, and we are the highest propensity of fire. I think if you look at the way that land lays, that son of a gun catches on fire, ain't nobody going to put that thing out.
Well, and if I had to prioritize...
There's a lot of places in Southern Oregon that way, but their frustration was everybody they call seems to think that it's not my problem. And I don't know how, you know, if they call you or they call your department and you don't, but, you know, maybe it's a good possibility, you know, when you're going up that direction, you need to stop in and see a couple of neighbors and say, hey, I'm here. Because they don't seem to see you trucking up and down the mountain. Huh?
Sneaky.
Can I recommend, Dan, that, and Darren, can we at least maybe see if these two portions can come to us at legal and we discuss, is this something we want to pursue? Would that be a start?
Yeah. Well, because it looks like it changed the rules in your favor and gives mm-hmm. you more
right.
Well, enforcement tools.
So right now, and it's not the DA's office fault, it's not a priority for them because they have...
Oh, yeah.
Right? So if I find your mail in a pile... I have to prove you put it there. So I come to your house. I say, Mr. DeYoung, I found your mail in Spencer Creek. Oh, I didn't do that.
Well, I get that. We were, yeah. We did, you know,
but this, because there's a deputy in Jackson County, too. So Deputy Johnson goes to your house and says, that's cool. But according to this ordinance, it's yours until it gets to the dump.
I see.
So you need right. to go clean that up.
You need to clean it up or we'll clean
or
it up.
You get, or you it's a $600 ticket over there. And so Eric writes you the ticket and gives you a month to clean it up. And then you bring him a dump receipt, and Eric gets rid of the ticket.
Uh-huh.
Yay.
And then if he doesn't, then he goes forward with the prosecution and the restitution.
Forward with the citation.
So that's if we bring in 1864
or 89. That's not written like that, but that's how he's doing it. I mean, nobody wants to go out and write an 80-year-old grandma a ticket because
this
her trash
Jackson
is in the
counties, and we can read through this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jackson
and
County.
Pick handpick whatever we want.
Well, I don't know about that. That's up for legal counsel to decide.
Well, that's for us to decide.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't know about
legal can offer us, but it is up to us as the policymakers to determine which of these do we have the political fortitude to go after or not, because it can be.
It's up to us to provide you with the tools to do your job that
correct.
We're going to ask of you. Yeah. And if we can't give you those tools, but I want to hear this, I want to hear what we're short, how you're short. What can we do to help you and give you the tools that you can go do
well,
your job?
Well, dumping for, I mean, because we're talking about dumping, but a little history on Spencer Creek. When we had the Title II funds, that got cleaned up 2 or 3 years in a row, and we had Deputy Montrose was investigating the trash dumps. Because you could do that all day, every day in this county.
Well, absolutely.
And we got, what years did we do that?
five, six, seven, eight, somewhere around those times.
And there's like boxes full of dump sites that we documented. So Spencer Creek has been cleaned up. And up until
cleaned up not too long ago, from what I was told the other day when I was up there.
It's been a couple of years, but yeah. And
he
then
said that somebody came through there not too terribly long ago. I mean, I'm talking like months ago.
And then we had a group that started out, because we started out paying contractors. And then there was a group that was cleaning up. Well, then that group, you know, groups changed. Then they were just taking the scrap and the stuff that they could get money for.
They're leaving the trash.
And then the money went away. Okay. Well, and so,
quick question. A stolen vehicle is reported as recovered, or it's there. We don't go out and tow that vehicle.
Well, I don't know what happened with that, because if it's stolen and I know it, I go get it.
Okay.
So I can't vouch for that.
Well, I've talked to people up in the Wolf Creek area. We took a tour up there one time, and they say, like, for instance, across the little town of Golden, there's that, it looks like a gravel pit down
there. Yeah, the wetlands.
That's county land.
That's county land.
There's all the counties.
They find cars down there and turn them in, and yep, they're stolen, and that, they still stay there. Yeah, nothing ever happens.
That's wrong. If it comes to me, I take care of it.
Okay.
And the patrol guys, if it's a stolen car, we just take care of it. Now, sometimes the owner says, oh, I'm going to recover it, and they don't come get it. But nobody just ignores it, doesn't go out there.
Once it's reported.
So,
as the owner of the car, I have to give you the opportunity to come and get it. Unless you don't answer the phone, which I love, because then I just call a tow truck and I'm done.
Yeah. as the owner of...
They bring it to your yard?
No.
There's a rotating list of tow companies that Josephine Jackson County share. And
they take it to a wrecking yard?
Well, like Fairgrounds Towing, if they come get the stolen car, it goes to their yard, and then they deal with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Caveman Towing, Fairgrounds.
It's not as easy to do anymore because the scrap pile, scrap used to be a car, and a branded car was, you go down to Cascade, and it was, you had $300. You had $300 just in iron. Right. And now it's $20.
Well, plus they got to jump to the hoops and get the title.
It's full of plastic.
You got to take the tires off of it. And all that. It's just, I think, I'm not going to point a finger at anybody, but I think the places we receive this stuff have made it so much harder. I remember in the old days, my father and I used to put everything in the back of the pickup, and once a week he'd go out here to the dump, and it was $3.
Right.
And he'd kick it all off in the landfill, and they'd bury it, and it was doable. And then all of a sudden, I went out there one time with a load of pallets from my business. And the guy used to walk around it, and he'd hold his hand like this. And if he could see above his hand, it was $10. If it was below his hand, it was $5. If it was above his hand and his eyebrows, it was $15. Mm-hmm. Never broke $10. I went there one time with a load of pallets, my normal load of pallets. And that'll be $45. And I said, what? Yeah. And he said, that falls under building materials. And I turned right around, and I says, see you later. And he goes, what are you going to do with that? And I says, you just made it none of your business. And I drove away, and I took care of it. I didn't throw it out in the woods. I'm not going to tell you what I did.
But it went away,
and I didn't dump it anywhere. It went away.
So Dan,
because we've got...
We're losing Darren in 2 minutes. As well.
Because of that, I think that's created a lot of, hey, I'm just going to go dump.
Well, Douglas County, for example, had the free dump forever, and they recently quit taking appliances. So now those are the plants that are showing up in the woods of Douglas County.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. And you watch Douglas County. They're in for more than just appliances.
So,
don't they have, you take trash service in Jackson County, right? You don't opt in or opt out. Isn't it part of your property taxes, I believe?
No,
one of the counties is, but it's
have to pay for it. Hmm. Yeah,
it might be Douglas County because of
Douglas. I thought it was Douglas County.
What I'm mixing.
Douglas is going to have to change that because that's a lot. It's expensive for all the Douglas.
Well, I'm not suggesting a free dump. I was just saying as an example. Now all that stuff's going to the woods because now people have paid to the dump.
Yeah. Well, and we're dealing with recycling. It's not happening anymore. So there's plastic being dealt with and different things. So a couple things. A couple years ago, 2 years ago. We applied for me to be a part of the RAC, and it was like, gosh, whatever happened, that never happened. And what we learned is nationwide, the RACs are not getting approved, which they're regional advisory committees for BLM. And so our RAC is the whole Oregon?
Southwest
Oregon.
Okay. And it's the body that's really in the best position to make recommendations directly to the Secretary of the Interior, like, hey, this is a problem. here's how we suggest you deal with it. Mm-hmm. And they're also responsible for distributing Title II funding when we get it through Secure Rural Schools.
Okay.
So that I'm hopeful that we will have our RACs, our Southwest Oregon RAC, back in business soon, and we'll get a list of RAC members, and we'll have a quorum so that we can meet and start addressing some of these issues. But I would...
But that would help with funding and getting this funding site supported, that we can have some monies for these.
Yep. One of the things we have done with Title II funds is, in addition to looking at specific areas, is we have set up some contracts to just address that general dumping in the, on public lands in the counties. So essentially it's funding that goes to the landfills to cover those fees.
And the RAC committees carried those forward when they stopped the deputy position funding. They did keep that going.
Well, here's what...
So if we sent someone out with... Sorry.
This is locally, okay? If we had a fund that says, okay, we're going to pay a private contractor to go do that, it can't happen according to our franchise agreement because it's called a third-party hauler. Mm. We don't allow third-party haulers. So in other words, it would have to go to Southern Oregon Sanitation, would have to do the whole process because nobody's allowed to haul refuse on a commercially in Josephine County unless they go through Southern Oregon Sanitation. And we're working on that. That's one of the things that we're working on.
It's part of the agreement.
But that just all of a sudden, because I've got some people who want to go clean up properties and they're not allowed to because they can't haul from the property to the dump. They have to
they can't do
have
it for
a
money.
Dumpster in the middle, and SOS can't provide the dumpster, and SOS can't pick it up on a timely fashion. We're really working with that. Trent and I are working very hard.
How does that apply to your county community service cleanup crew for the Sheriff's Department?
It's not Sheriff's Office. It's County Corrections. They have work crews. Those are all on contract.
And
so
I don't think they're a licensed contractor.
No.
They've approached us about trying to do a partnership.
Yeah. Well, and they could. It's just a matter of how do you pay for the crew for the day. That's what, $300 a day for a crew? Yeah. And so those are all on contract. Annette Sorensen over at Community Corrections handles all those contracts. But she gets them through ODOT and City of Grants Pass. And so when you see the highway crews, that they're being paid to do that from ODOT and different stuff. So
can I? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Yes, keep on.
I was curious. So is that what you were saying, Elizabeth, about you guys had some funding with Title II that if a contractor went out and cleaned up a spot, you guys would pay the dump fee?
Yep.
Well, so they weren't paying the contractor to clean it up. They're just paying the dump fee. So maybe there is a way around that third-party contractor.
Well, see, that,
because then the person's not doing it for money.
Because maybe we as a county could have our crews go out.
This is all hinges on our franchise agreement. It's all a franchise agreement that somebody along the line agreed to. So that's where we're going to review that. That's
but if the county partners with BLM and says, we'll send a crew once a week or once every 2 weeks, and we're going to go just working on picking up trash in the federal lands, and part of that is you're not paying our crew to work, but you're paying the dump fee. And so we just have an IGA between us or an understanding that so that's not third party anymore because we're not getting paid to do it,
and we're paying the dump,
and you're paying the dump fee.
You know, we'll bring that up. I have a question on Title II. Is it by a percentage of the SRS?
I have to be honest. I'm not sure.
Okay, the reason I'm asking, and this is just strictly for me as this commissioner, we were told that via the Daily Courier that Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley got us back SRS funding last year to the tune of $4 million. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. We received a check for $1.9 million. Mm. And we said, where's the other 2.1? And they said, oh, we already paid you that in timber receipts. You took your $2.1 million in 17 for timber receipts. And the article said, both of them said it was above and beyond timber receipts. So I figure we need to get $4 million. Not 1.9, which is the remainder. I've asked this question over and over again, and nobody seems to answer. But my problem is that as this body here, this governing body, they read that we got $4 million. They ask us, where's the other $2.1 million? And we say, we didn't get it. And they go, You're hiding it in that courthouse somewhere. There's a big hole in the bottom of the seat.
It's in Lily's couch.
It's in, it's
I
under
got
your
that
chair.
Craigslist, so who knows?
But I've never received an answer on that because it actually said, this was a courier, which is a quote, in fact, we got the press release, that it is over and above. We got this for you. Thank you, Josephine County. Yeah, we did it. Boy, we're working for you. And we got $1.90.
Uh-huh.
And 210 is leaving out there somewhere, and nobody seems to want to touch it. I'm on the board of OMC.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you need to lean on that. Right. This county missed 2.1.
Yep, last one.
Okay, would you guys support our board submitting a letter to acting Interior Secretary asking that the RACs be reinstated and updated, also our congressional delegation encouraging them to work with the Department of Interior.
And when they respond, they can just slip that check in that Dan's got.
That'll work.
That'd be great.
Well, I mean, would that be helpful?
Economize.
I want to be respectful of a process and changing a leadership, but I mean, if it's hindering local work to be done for over 2 years.
It certainly can't hurt.
Okay. At least it's something and acknowledging. Mm-hmm. We can also, as far as including, hey, we'd love you to include Title II funds in there as well. That's supporting our local efforts. And so, okay. Is there anything else that you guys can think of that we... I know that I talked to both of you guys on Tuesday, and what I'd like to do is set up a meeting, and we can come over. You guys can... just a small meeting and say, okay, here's... But I want to make sure that we get some information for you guys.
Okay.
So that one we'll do separate.
And gate on Spencer Creek? I'm going to tell you what the folks up there said. Uh-huh. I think they talked to you.
Wait, before you talk gate on Spencer Creek, nice to see all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice to meet you.
But they said they talked to you and asked you, have you ever been up Spencer Creek? And you said no.
I have. I want to say that I have. I've been up Powell Creek, and I want to say that going up Spencer was a part of that trip.
Came down Spencer.
Yeah, came down Spencer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
I didn't want to commit saying yes. I'm familiar with.
That was eight area roads to drive down.
That was the sticky part. But I like I said, I went up and talked to those are my constituents up there.
Right.
So just to let you know, I am interested in what's going on at Spencer Creek, and that's not the only one.
The thing is you know, with we're not in a position that road has a public right-of-way access.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not in a position to be able to gate off the public from the use of that road.
Foots Creek.
Spencer Creek.
Foots Creek. You blocked it off. Been blocked off for years. It's public access.
I can't. I'm sorry.
I'm just giving you an example.
So we're finding that in our county there's not consistent policy on
when
a gate goes up or when it's not. And when we're told, why did that...
Uh-huh.
You know, public access go away. Well, we have a right to. Okay, well, we won't hear. Well, we can't do it. So just finding that when we're trying to explain to the public or advocate, we're getting different answers for different areas.
So some of those rights of way, some of them say public access and some of them say administrative access. Some of them say timber access. And so those really dictate a lot of, I can't speak to gating decisions that were made.
But that's of concern to the folks up there, and therefore puts it on my plate as concern.
What I would suggest, though, is the areas. Okay, so this yellow shaded area is actually BLM.
Mm-hmm.
This area is private.
Mm-hmm.
These are the areas where the shooting is occurring that is actually endangering the homes.
Yeah. And this right here
on private land.
Yes.
Do we know whose the private land is?
I don't.
It's a private
it's
timber
either
company.
Hancock, Weyerhaeuser.
So they could potentially put some rules in place, some trespass signs, some...
Yeah.
This whole area here is all now Madrone. They said it's been reforested, but it's all Madrone because I imagine it probably isn't really good for growing, for trees. Probably the soil isn't right. They're re-logging this one right now because there is equipment on this road.
Right.
And this right here was probably where all the shotgun shells are that you can't see. The road. Is this one right there?
You're correct. That's the first shooting spot. But I think the logging is happening on the ridge on the other side of across from that clear cut right now.
This way.
There's a bigger, wider map.
Okay, all right. Yeah, this is where you have a logging area here?
It's private.
That's private.
That's private. Okay, and this one here?
That's private.
That's private. This one here is the one that's being logged again right now. But, well, yeah, you're right. But there's a house right, I think that's it right there, is it? Isn't that right?
Yeah. That's your Murphy, Murphy Creek.
This is Murphy Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, these folks are, they're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know how to make them happy. But I said I would look into it, and I will look into it, and I'll.
So I would suggest, really, there's so much. So we can look into what we can do as far as, you know, safe shooting and respect and protect kind of campaigns. That's what we've been doing in some of our other areas. Mm-hmm. But I would really suggest working with those private landowners who have complete jurisdiction over their property in terms of how they, you know, they can close their property off to shooting. They can say that there's
I understand they can close their property, yeah. But when you get up here and you're shooting over the top of somebody's house, mm-hmm. and it's all night long because they have the big parties up there, and now all night long, and you call, and uh-huh. sorry, we don't have the manpower to go up in there because we don't have in the sheriff at all.
Well, the mm-hmm. ranger,
have you ever been up there during and driven in when they were shooting on a weekend?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what do they say? Hi, how you doing? Yeah,
well, they can shoot. Yeah. As long as they're doing it in a safe manner.
Okay.
So, I don't know what to do about that. I mean, I can't.
And an ordinance prohibiting shooting in the county is not
going to work. Nah, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
That's not going to fly.
And the rangers maybe use our dispatch, so at nighttime they're not out there either because we don't have dispatch.
Right, nobody is.
Yeah. So, we used to.
But it would be something that we could contact the property owners and say, we're having problems with stuff being dumped on your property, mm-hmm. shooting on those properties, different stuff. Would you be willing to work with us to see if we can make it safer up there? There wouldn't be harm in us reaching out. We can find out on assessor's map who the contact is.
We're down to basically Hancock, Murphy, Weyerhaeuser, and one more.
You know, unfortunately or unfortunately, I think fortunately, I would say, public lands, we have very few limitations of what we can do, as long as we're recreating in a safe and legal, manner. And that really, all of our regulations really assume and are hinged upon, you know, the personal responsibility of the individual engaged out there on public lands. And so, it limits our ability to, you know, stop people from doing stupid things sometimes, I would say.
And some of it.
Do you guys put hours of operation on your lands? I mean, could the public access be closed at night?
Not.
Because it's not like, camping's allowed up there? Or?
We can do that at certain areas. Like, there's certain parts on the river corridor, like Griffin Park, the BLM lands are closed. That was done through a planning process. Yeah. So it's not something we can just tomorrow say, hey, now it's a day use area only. And then under our day use regulations, that's from like 10 at night to 6 in the morning. Anytime before or after doesn't count. But that's how we typically get our things in after the Federal Register notice to be posted.
It would be a minimum of an 18-month process to implement something like that.
Well, that's quick these days. Just kidding, sorry.
I tried to get shooting stopped in Morris Creek a few years ago, and there's no way to... Because the BLM process, and it's got to go to D.C., and it's like this whole...
You know, we've heard about that. We've seen about land exchange. It might take some time and some process.
Why?
Different access.
Huh?
It goes back to timber access, public access, or administrative access. I don't understand all the accesses. I can't put a gate in for you, sir, or take one in. But, I'm just kidding. No, it goes back to the access.
You guys are just absolutely solidifying what I said. Not mine. And that's frustrating to the people.
And it
out
depends
there.
Also
me,
who,
because a few years ago I was one of them, and now I'm sitting in this state and I'm getting the same thing. And that's my problem. This not me. Hey, it's not me. Hey, it's not me. Who in the world is it? And if it's nobody's, that's not right either. That is not right by anybody's standards to say all of these government agents, and I'm talking a lot of commas and a lot of zeros in everybody's budget, and nobody's going to take responsibility and say, you know what, we're going to fix this. We hear you loud and clear, we're going to fix it.
I hear you, but then there's the group that come back and say, you're taking my citizen rights away as an American citizen that pays the taxes. I get free access to public lands, and how dare you tell me what I want to do?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think... my hands are tied for a reason. So
put a sign up there that says you're entering public land, and this means everybody's land. Please act with respect
and protect. That is
something
that we...
But you know what? And the normal guy's going to go, you know what? I'm going to clean my stuff up. Put another sign up there that says, you know, pack it in, pack it out.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I'm talking shotgun, and I've shot shotguns, and I've shot bullets and stuff all over this county in the years gone by.
Steve.
We never left a mess.
Yeah.
Never left a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we were normal people. And if you don't tell, this is generational. The kid that wrecked a car up there, his dad wrecked a car in exactly the same corner.
Yeah.
It's generational. Dad sped through that corner and smashed into a tree, and the kid sped through the corner and smashed into the same tree on Murphy Creek Road.
Mm-hmm.
It's generational. These kids are going up there with their dad, and if their dad isn't saying, hey, let's, okay, kids, we used to take our kids. We were all done, said, hey, we're getting ready. The kids would go up shooting with us. And, you know, they'd shoot, 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 shoot. Everybody had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's clean our mess up here. Let's get all these shotgun shells back in the box, and we're going to take it down out of here. And that's what we really do. But if we don't even hang a sign that says, you know, this is please have respect for the land, I think that's a start. You know, you're, you know, and the, even if dad doesn't read it, the kid goes, hey, Pop, I saw that sign down there. I think I want to clean this mess up.
That is something we can work on.
Okay, that's maybe that's a starter.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, we have to take, you know, a sign. What's a sign? And I keep, we say, okay, put a sign up. Oh, nobody reads those. Nobody reads it because nobody's given the opportunity to read it. So take down all the stop signs.
Mm-hmm.
But I say if we can do something and we show that we, this is not just your land, it's everybody's land. And quit treating it like it's yours and yours alone, and you can leave it a mess, and nobody cares, because people do care.
Mm-hmm.
We care. Please, this is our land, our, in big letter.
Mm-hmm.
Mine just as soon as yours. And everybody has a right to use it, but not abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I, you know, I, that might be the,
That is where we can start.
Okay, please.
Okay.
And I need something
is
back
where
to
we can start.
Creek.
So we're
and they start
seeing
some traffic
in
that area, and I think... We're probably going to get somewhere. And if we use Spencer Creek maybe as a start, then, you know, because I've gone up Granite Hill years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids would go up there and burn pallets in the middle of the road, and guess what that leaves?
Leaves all the nails.
Yeah. So we'd rake all the nails off the side of the road and get them out of the road bed. But we were shooters, and we weren't going up there. We were going up there to recreate, and it would clear the mess up and go home. If there was trees down over the thing from wind blow over the wintertime, fine, we cut them out of the way.
We can start with that, and honestly, one of the things that is, I think, most helpful is to have advocates in the sports shooting community that talk about cleaning up after yourself and talk about safe shooting and actually...
If
I tell people, that doesn't go over very well. Like, I'm infringing on their freedom.
If you want to continue to use this, we've got to keep it clean or it will be taken away. But right now, they don't think it's going to be taken away because it didn't get taken away from their dad and their granddad.
Right. But to have advocates, I think, is how we're going to solve this problem. You have my commitment to work on getting the education program going up there. The folks that we can talk about who specifically in Grants Pass will be responsible to follow through, but we've got our community outreach specialist, Christina Beslin. She is working on this issue district-wide. Do you want me to give her your contact information?
Yeah,
for,
as well.
Okay.
She helped us in the fire season.
Yeah.
You'll like her. She's nice.
Yeah. She's passionate both about cleaning up public lands, and she's also passionate about just working with people. So,
who contacts somebody in the towing business or whatever to get those three cars out there? I think there's three that we're talking
about. So what happens on this district is there is a long and distinguished list of vehicles that are banned in the woods that Jim Berg has a list of, and when he has money, he takes two or three off the top. And the next time he has money, he takes two or three off the top.
Who's that?
He is an employee at our office.
Okay. Ones that we can't find owners for. Or, like, there's a trailer on Quartz Creek right now. He works at the Grants Pass office.
Let's ask Jim what his
But the list is
on.
Long. So it could be their spot on list. And I don't keep the list. But, I mean, it is a long list. I sent Jim three more cards the other day. So I mean, it's like a daily thing to send Jim a car that needs to be removed or has been abandoned. They removed the one from Stratton Creek a couple weeks ago, but it was like $1,500 to tow that motorhome to the Sprague Seed Orchard. Cars are one thing, but motorhomes, the BLM's got to keep for like 30 days. And then, so they're towing them twice.
Yeah. On the car issue, have we contacted like Cascade Auto Recyclers and say, you know what?
They won't get them.
We're gonna. They say no.
Steel prices are down.
Steel prices are down, and those are way over the bank, and they're not recovery. They're back up to it and take it and leave.
So I know it seems like it's a lot,
but that's the Spencer Creek isn't like the situation isn't new, and it's been cleaned up, and we've been working on things. And then if it's not Spencer Creek complaining about wanting a gate or wanting a gate out, it's Savage Creek, and we had a camera stolen from Savage Creek, and we had those on dump sites.
Darren and I picked it on his
deal. They met Deputy Montrose, and Don met with the Savage Creek Neighborhood Watch and said, yeah, we'll put cameras out, and somebody stole the cameras. After they hit them, and like 2 days after the Neighborhood Watch meeting, somebody stole the cameras. So somebody on the neighborhood on Savage Creek went looking for the cameras.
I think the scale of the problem is really something to bring before the RAC, because the problem seems to be growing exponentially.
Oh, it will.
As our population grows, and our resources are not. And so part of the problem is where we've probably been able to keep up with some of these in the past, we are at a position where we are struggling to keep up with
some. If we don't start to reverse that cycle, it's only going to get bigger. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to reverse the cycle by doing what we've been doing, because you know what? We've been putting meatloaf in the oven, hoping prime ribs are going to come out, and it's just not going to do that. Whatever we're doing, it isn't working. So I want to explore some different ideas of maybe see that it'll work. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, you probably heard it from the last bunch of commissioners that sat here, and the ones before that, and the ones before
that. That's not true, because I have brought this 4 times, and this is the first time I've been asked to come talk about it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, no kidding. Chairman Morgan lined that up. Good for her.
Well, you know what's funny is this isn't the first time I've seen it, though. The first time I sent it to legal, and I said, what can we do to maybe implement this? And I got an email back and said, well, this is how it's different than ours. And no, oh, let's look at it, let's bring it forward, nothing like that. And it's like, okay. You know, so the timing of running into you guys 2 days ago, the timing of you being called out to Spencer Creek to follow up the emails, the
timing
needs to
go to the head of the class and get something done about it.
Yeah, I mean, but we're not really a sit on our hands and not want to get something done. We might get a little impassioned sometimes on it, but we really want to get things done. And so, you know, yeah, we got to look at this, and we have to be wise in how we approach it so that we can show how we are still caring for our citizens while we're saying we're going to hold you accountable. Please do the right thing. But an education campaign alongside is a good thing. But, you know, our folks need to be heard, you know, so what's the right answers of we didn't just say, okay, thank you, you know. Sometimes just convening meetings and getting people to talk. The problem is most of the people I know that go use those lands aren't people that come to meetings like this. And
I wouldn't be at meetings either if I didn't have this job.
Yeah, well, I was teasing the other day about the redneck tree hunting. When you need a Christmas tree, you just take your shotgun out, you shoot the base, it gets the critters and the snow off, and you haul off your tree, you know? You might have... But, yeah, I mean, it's not really... It is generations, like you said. I mean, how many generations do we know that ride motorbikes in this community and are frustrated that mountain after mountain is being said, you can't use motorbikes anymore? Mm-hmm. And they're saying, I've been doing this for how long? Mm-hmm. And so-and-so before me, and so-and-so before me, so mm-hmm. I just happen to be related to most of them. And so I get to hear a lot of it.
Never tried a motorcycle myself.
I know. You've never taken that one hill.
Double slide.
Never. You should hear his stories of what he's done.
No, don't.
If it doesn't have 4 wheels on it, I'm not getting it. More on it.
So I appreciate you guys coming through. I don't know when the last time you were here was, though.
It's probably been since before fire season.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So about a year.
Yeah.
Been plenty busy, though. I have a question to ask you after the meeting about BLM. Just one question.
Okay. Oh, I do have another question about BLM as well, if possible. So the contract with ODF.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's a statewide BLM issue versus just
an agreement, and it is a west-wide.
Okay.
West side.
You know, I guess from my standpoint, mm-hmm. I understand funding is tight for all of you guys, but I think what really hit me was two summers ago with the fires that we had, and it wasn't BLM, it was U.S. Foresters. And I understand U.S. Forest Service is a little more gun-shy when it comes to taking on the fires. And someone told me 2 days ago it's because their employees are not necessarily backed by the agency when there's a lawsuit. And so they're a lot more, let's put the brakes on, which is scary for me. But we had a fire off of Shan Creek 2 years ago that was under 200 acres. They had 800 feet to go to get it completely lined. U.S. Forest Service all of a sudden said, it's not safe for us to continue. We're going to backburn 2,000 acres and see if we can stop it that way. And ODF actually said, why, what happened, what changed? This is nothing different than what we've been dealing with the last couple of days. And they actually separated out from their agreement in that circumstance, finished the 800 feet, and got it lined and kept it small. Well, that same area burned the next year, of course, with the Granite Hill, Pleasant Creek, whatever the right fire name at the right time of year is. But then we had that with Checo, with the four hot shots dropped in when the Checo bars first started, and they said, oh, it wasn't safe, we got to get them out of there. Well, that's not normally a four-person team that goes in to fight a fire. And so we were starting to see lingo of it's not safe, so U.S. Forest Service isn't going to engage, which is a lot of what our community felt meant there's not going to be full suppression, there's not going to be in going after this. And then we have our fires along 54 on I-5 or various areas where ODF is going in and bringing tankers in and putting these out and helping these. So we're seeing a difference of, wait, ODF defended us on Shan Creek and got it done. They saved these homes over here. So where the community is observing behaviors, it turned into, we want ODF to be the one that's making the decisions because they're the ones that live here locally. They're not being transferred from somewhere else in the country or somewhere else that doesn't understand our topography, our culture, our this and that.
And while that transfer is happening, the fire continues to get bigger.
Well, and it's just, I mean, I understand you guys have had a good working relationship there. I also know funding's tight.
The Forest Service practices full suppression.
I understand that. And Merv, when he came in this last year, he said that. I was in those meetings and I heard him telling those agencies. I also, in dealing with some of the Type 1 incident commanders who looked at me and said, I'm sorry, my customers are the firefighters and it doesn't really matter how it's impacting your community. And I wanted, that's not what a local government official wants to ever hear. The customer is always the citizens that live in this community, and it's our backyard. It's our, yes, the firefighters have to be kept safe, but they're serving, they're our guests. They're not the ones who have to live here and deal with the ramifications of everything else or the day-to-day in and out. They're here for 2 weeks and they're gone, or however long. So that was a frustration of last summer as well. For me, going into this year, I sent a letter off to our legislators in Oregon saying, if there's anything you can do, I would prefer that ODF or whoever the regional forest manager be the primary in every fire on earth. That they have to work with the other agencies, but they're going to work on using every resource possible to get those out. Now, locally, our citizens do pay a fee. The same ODF, I don't know if you guys pay a fee or you just get reimbursed for the cost. But our citizens all pay a fee for firefighting. But
they pay
it's
twice the fee that your citizens pay.
Correct. And I understand that. But our citizens mostly are all in other fire districts as well, so right. Have other fees.
But that's
also
how
paying.
We pay. I mean, you're asking. We pay a fee, and it's double.
I've been made aware of that. I just think that under ODF and the partnership that you guys have had, you have way better success than what I've seen out of U.S. Forest Service and to have yet another agency. So I understand you guys have to figure out all that other kind of stuff, but I have appreciated the partnership that you guys have with ODF, and I would love to continue to support that if there is a way to continue to get an agreement in place. Obviously, the financing has to be figured out. But as far as the outcomes in our community, we have seen far more success with ODF and BLM partnership than when U.S. Forest Service goes in and there's some different stuff. Merv's only been in there a year, almost. May will be a year. So
yeah, the BLM and ODF are, they're on a trajectory to have an agreement in place for this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard different things. So it was just one of those things that it's like, I understand it's above my pay grade. And so that's why I thought I'd ask. I don't know which levels those agreements are signed, if it's each local office.
It's the state director.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's handled west side wide, and you know, it's we appreciate our partnership with ODF. We also value our partnership with the Forest Service, and I think our common interest among all three agencies is that we anticipate full suppression, and we do want everyone to go home at night, and we all care about our communities. But certainly, we plan to. I hope we had some good working relationships built between our agencies last year, and I hope that continues to grow.
I think locally we see those relationships, and you see the local folks that, I mean, like the current acting interim force ranger, who I don't know the title. What was Matt Pichwerk's title?
District Ranger.
District Ranger. So the interim acting forest ranger is a kid I've known since I was 4 years old. He had graduated high school with his sister. My sister worked for his mom at RCC. I mean, it's like, I know Scott Blower knows this area and cares about this area, but he's an acting interim and all that. So absolutely, the local folks that are here, it's their home too. It's when we have the folks transferring in from other places that no longer are listening to you guys as agency representatives necessarily as, and when you see them say at the very start of fire season, we're going to take it to Bear Camp, and you see them take it to Bear Camp. And that's a concern for me as well. And so I'm just spouting.
Some of this, and of course there's a lot of rumors that fly around, but for instance, the fire that started up Taylor Creek, it was on Facebook where there was a logging show going up there, and he saw the smoke coming out of the trees, and he said he contacted U.S., this is his story, contacted U.S. Forest Service, says, I've got a logging show up there, I have three cats and a 3,500-gallon water tender, I'll run up there and put that out. And they said, no, you won't. And he said, no. And he said, I can go put that out. No, you won't. And that turned into the Klondike Fire. Yeah, the Taylor Creek Fire
that's what it's called, Klondike Fire.
And we had, as part of ONC, we invited a guy from the BLM. He came out of the Denver office, and we had a meeting down at Tap Rock. And he said, what would you change? And I said, I will never ask your permission to put out a fire. If I see a fire, I'm going to put it out. I don't care who it belongs to. Doesn't matter if you catch on fire and, oh, sorry, you're not putting it out because you're not that jurisdiction. But I said, that's what's happening now in too many cases where it used to be loggers that would that were in the woods, and they get a call. And they say, yep, we got a little smoke around the corner from you on your mountain. Yeah, we're going to take walk a cat around there, and we're going to take the water tender down, and we're going to put it out. And they put it out. Mills used to shut down. People had a bag in their truck with fire tools and stuff to go put fires out at a moment's notice. Now they're told they're not qualified because they're not properly trained, and we haven't set up the command post, and we don't have all of this stuff coming in, flying in from all over the place. While we're waiting for those resources, we're not utilizing the resources here that would be gladly to go put that fire out, and they don't do it. And it's why? It's because certain entities say, no, you won't. And that's a real bothersome thing to me because I've watched them using drip torches on top of Heart Mountain in the wilderness area. But yet, you look at what happened in Burns where those people were using, trying to back burn, and there's more to that story, but they accidentally burned 175 acres, and they're in jail, and I watched a guy in a wilderness area with a drip torch. That doesn't sound well with me, and I know there's probably an explanation for the whole thing. But you guys did not get good press from the regular folks during this last fire season. Not at all. Because why? It didn't get put out. And I asked...
So you're talking about us collectively as feds and firefighters.
I asked, not firefighters, because it got too big. But I asked Walden when he was here, when Greg Walden was here. I drew the lucky ticket. And I said, I need to ask something. Why do we have a policy that violates four congressional acts? Number one, ONC Act of 1937. You're not cutting the amount of timber that act demanded for sustainability. Number one. Number two, the Clean Air Act, when fires, wildland fires, are not in the Clean Air Act. They're exempt from the Clean Air Act. Endangered Species Act. 9 animals per acre, roughly, burn up in a fire. and the Clean Water Act. That fire did not stop at the Illinois River. It went right on through it. It doesn't hold back 300 feet like the industry is supposed to do. There's four congressional acts, and everybody just says, well, that's the way it is. And that bothers me. It bothers me immensely because I was born here, raised here. When somebody tells me that 50 years ago was the reason why we have this problem today, I'm saying that we quit logging, we quit managing the forest 50 years ago, and this is the result of doing it your way, not my way. Because I watched it back in the old days. The Tillamook burn was a great big one. The Silver Creek fire was a great big one. But we didn't have them every year like we have them now because we didn't name fires and we didn't make T-shirts and sell them. We really didn't have the helicopters and stuff back then. We fought them on the ground. I just got a, you probably read the Smoke Jumper book. I just read that Smoke Jumper book. Really, really interesting. And it talked about fires that got out of control, but they tried every darn thing in their power to put it out. And when it's this big. And I fought fires in the Navy, and you know what? If I fought fires in the Navy, I'd still be out there paddling. Because I don't want to touch that. I'm not trained. And that's bothersome to me. That nobody can do anything unless you're properly trained and have the proper credentials and on the right way bandwidth and all of that other stuff. That is really frustrating to this old man. And you won't have to put up with me, you know, way in the future. But I'm not going to allow somebody to come in here and tell that what happened years ago did not work. I won't allow it. That's called history. And I'm sorry, I mean, it's experience. And there used to be kids that come out of college. They would come down from college. And a friend of mine, I just had lunch with him today. 72 years old, because that's what I did all summer long. I was in a crummy with five or six other guys. We had the tools in the back, and we cruised the timber. If there was a fire, they'd call it in on our little on their shortwave radio. Said, we're on it. We got it. We don't have that. Why don't we take some of the money that we spend suppressing the fire and put Herman Bear Trigger Company, HB Company, and Grayback? Why are they not in the forest when we knew there was going to be a lightning storm come down through here like Grant through Dixie? We had 1,500 lightning strikes, 129 fires, and 121 of them were put out by ODF. The other ones morphed into huge fires that lasted the rest of the summer. If those guys would have been in the forest ahead of time...
We did call additional resources. We did.
Before the lightning strikes or after?
Before.
Okay.
Before. We worked with ODF. We called in additional resources. You know, I think it was something like 99% of the fires were suppressed.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. And so I hear where you're coming from.
But could Herman Bear Trigger Company, who's a paid company, not ODF, but HB Company and Grayback, these are private companies, and they are in the firefighting first response business. Why aren't they, why don't we put some money ahead of the fire and say, we need you in the woods, instead of saying, I'm going to wait until ODF can't put it out and we have these other fires, and then you call HB and he gets everybody together, puts them on the truck and goes out to the park. I don't know that.
ODF has contractors that they use.
I can't.
ODF has contractors that they use.
Okay.
And I know that those agencies are used, one of my reserve deputies, Brian Coney, used to work for Grayback, and trying to get him on reserve calls was always, because all winter long they were doing prescribed burns and trimming and thinning and all that kind of stuff, and it was all BLM contracts. So it's kind of one of those things that, I mean, they were doing some of the preventative stuff, but then you're also saying getting crews out there to just have extra feet on the ground so when stuff happens... you know, how do we get teams there as soon as possible? Or
in addition to the preparedness funding that we gave to ODF to cover all of the BLM lands, I mean, that is our basket. That is our firefighting force on BLM. It is ODF. In addition to that, we called in, I believe, six engines in advance of that lightning storm. And so that is one of the reasons that there was the success level that there was. It was because we brought in additional resources.
Okay. Want to hear something off the rails? You want to hear something clear off the rails? I'd like to see us put a lightning rod on the, you have BLM maps that show where the lightning hits most.
Uh-huh.
Put a lightning rod on, say, the top 12 mountains and carve a 100-yard radius around it down to bare dirt and attract that lightning rather than just let it hit randomly and just see what it does. We don't haven't had any fires up on Beacon, Baldy, or Bluey since they put cell towers up there. None on there. They started at Interstate 5 and worked their way up, but nothing up the top. Mm-hmm. Is that something you'd be interested in, a pilot program in Josephine and Jackson County?
I'm not sure if that is something we can do.
The guy that wrote it, because I get beat up for it because I brought it up one time.
Uh-huh.
And I get the guy, so I work for the Forest Service, and I was in a tower, lookout tower, and I've had lightning hit that tower because it had a lightning rod in it. But then it hit half a mile down the ridge.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying you're going to drain that cloud of everything, but every time the lightning hit his tower was something that didn't hit something else. And that's why I was wondering if a lightning rod, zero moving parts, and just try it. Pilot program for 12 of them.
Mm-hmm.
See if that works. Interested?
I'm not sure.
Who do I get in contact with that sparks some interest in that? Walden?
Sure.
Wyden?
It's a novel concept. I would be interested in learning more.
My son lives in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
Every house has a lightning rod. Why? Because they got to drain that cloud somewhere, and rather through your house, they'd rather direct it to something. And I'm not saying that you are going to stop all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you supply a path of least resistance, because I understand a little bit about electricity, that it would zap that and drain that cloud of protons or whatever they are, electrons, for a split second. And it takes a while to build that back up again. But I'm saying if you could drain those clouds and your maps, I think you've got maps out there that show lightning propensity of where it hits the most when the lightning storms come through. And maybe if we could drain off 3% or 5% of the strikes, if there's 1,500 strikes, 5% of 1,500 is 300 lightning strikes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be something we're thinking about. I don't know. I mean, at least we're going to try something.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing right now, if we say, gee, I don't know if it's going to work, but I want to know who I would find. I talked to an engineer about it, and he said, you know what, you might be onto something. And what, this was like, ended the conversation on every conversation I've had about it. What's the harm in trying?
Mm-hmm.
There is no harm in trying. To throw our hands up and say, oh, I don't think that's going to work. Well, I think it's worked, so we might clash. You didn't say you didn't think it would work. But I'd like some research on that, and maybe try a few of them. Say, okay, you can monitor how many times that lightning rod gets hit.
Have you talked to someone who studies lightning about it?
There's an outfit in Denver, I think, that engineer was going to get a hold of. But he tried drawing it out for me on a whiteboard. He goes, well, this is how this works. And he drew the clouds across. And that's how this works. Mm-hmm. And I said, what just happened? Oh, my gosh. The cloud came in contact with that lightning rod and drained it. I says, I think you answered your own question. But I think, I guess I could probably Google lightning experts, huh? Would that be, maybe I could do that?
And
get some information and say, you know, this thing works?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going by my son that lives in Oklahoma City. Yeah, we got a lightning rod.
We do partner with universities, and I mean, we certainly take proposals.
And that may be where I need to go.
I
just wonder if your thoughts were that would be something that did rather than say, nope, it's not going to work and walk away like most people do. But then other people, they go, you know what? At least you're thinking of something, for Pete's sake.
Uh-huh.
Nobody else seems to be thinking about it. If it's something that simple, maybe it doesn't work. But something that simple just might work.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
So, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I appreciate that you guys have given us so much time.
Yeah, boy, yeah.
And
I know. Longer than you figured, wasn't it?
That we have more to do.
Okay.
So we'll keep touch and base.
Okay.
Does my staff know how to reach you guys, or just email that I have already worked to set up something?
Oh, the email works fine. Okay. But yeah, they should have our contact information.
I assume that you all reached out.
Yeah.
It was funny, though, because it said BLM.
She's not. Sure.
Thanks, Trish.
One of my cards. I don't have them in here. I got my other
one.
If you could do that.
There are things that come up that we can be of help. Please let me know.
Okay, great.
And I appreciate you guys making time as well. I didn't know if I'd get in trouble for spanning a couple more topics, but I appreciate it.
we don't get you in the hot seat very often.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Okay.
We're there all the time. Right?
And you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Funny,
and that's okay if I keep those maps.
You know, I have
a couple of these two maps here.
Yep.
To let the people know Spencer Creek that I did talk to.
It was the 16th, I think, of the follow-up, and I needed to find out more about who's there.
You can tell them I have been out there.
Okay, that's what I want to tell them. He said, "Oh, shit, I've never been up there." Now I can say you're wrong. She came in through the Calcutta.
I'll try to find out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I just. Yeah, hate the idea of saying, yes, I've been there, and then somebody tells me.
Well, I can tell that she didn't think of it as Spencer Creek because she came through from the Palfrey side.
Thank you.
Got it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Thanks, Dawn. Good to see you.
You too.
Okay. Are you all right? I mean, with Darren going, do you want to bypass the next two?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm going to say if there's nothing further, we're going to be adjourned at 3:45.
Appreciate your